Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. Presidents and Congress, sometimes the two get along pretty well. Sometimes relations are in the doghouse. And sometimes a single president can enjoy relations both strong and troubled within a single term. These days, President Obama faces a split Congress and a mixed record when it comes to his relationship with the second branch of government. Today, we'll look at presidents' relations with Congress from Truman to Obama. Later on this hour, a conversation with a retired Army colonel who became a diplomat and resigned from the State Department in protest of the war in Iraq. She voices strong opposition to our growing reliance on drone warfare. But first up, the Congress and the White House. With us is Donald Ritchie. He's the historian of the Senate who has a new book out examining President Truman's relations with Congress. The title, Congress and Harry S. Truman, A Conflicted Legacy. Don, nice to have you back here again. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, of all the modern presidents, Don, who had the best relations with members of Congress, is there an assumed head of the class when it comes to congressional relations in the modern presidency?
Well, certain presidents get rated higher than others. Probably Lyndon Johnson in the modern presidency had the highest rating. He's number two right after Franklin Roosevelt. Because of his great success record in 1964, 65, 66. Of course, his success record went down considerably in 67 and 68, but basically because of so much got through in that first couple of years, he ranks very high as sort of the supermajority leader of the presidency.
I was going to say, you would think he would do well because he had been such a towering congressional leader over the years. So I guess on one hand, it's not surprising.
Well, he knew the Congress better than anyone else. And I once talked to someone who handled congressional liaison during the Nixon administration, and he'd been listening to some of the tapes of Johnson's telephone conversations with members of Congress. And he said, you know, I can't imagine what it would have been like to work for a president who actually knew where a bill was in Congress, because the congressional liaison people have to sort of pull the president's arm a bit and say, come on, give a call, talk to the chairman. But Johnson was ahead of them on all of those occasions.
And he worked those guys too, right? He'd call them up and say, you know, pal, I need your help.
He knew them, and he would ask for help. George Smathers, a senator from Florida who knew Kennedy and Johnson very well, said the difference between them is that Kennedy was a rich man who never had to ask anybody for anything and couldn't bring himself to ask anybody. He said Johnson had been asking people for things since he was a child. It was second nature to him. And he was constantly asking you to vote his way.
But, you know, one of the things you find out in your study of how presidents get along with Congress, Don, is this flip idea, which is that even those presidents who had lots of experience in Congress, some of them didn't do so well once they became presidents when it came to their relationships with Congress.
It's ironic that John Kennedy and Gerald Ford, whose entire professional career before they became president was spent in Congress, didn't have really good relations, at least in terms of the bills that they got passed, as opposed to Dwight Eisenhower and Ronald Reagan, who neither had served in Congress and had a pretty good relationship with the Congress and got quite a bit of what they wanted passed.
So how do you explain that? Why did that happen that way?
It's the circumstances of the time. Of course, Kennedy asked Congress to do a lot more than Eisenhower did. Eisenhower was also sort of a moderate centrist Republican who worked very well with the Democrats who were in charge. Actually, he did better with Lyndon Johnson in the Senate and Sam Rayburn in the House than he did with his Republican leadership in Congress.
Well, he sort of made a deal with the devil, though, didn't he? You write about this in your book, Don, that what was the deal he made?
Well, Eisenhower was very interested in internationalist foreign policy, and he had defeated Robert Taft, who was sort of the last of the isolationists, and he wanted to continue that kind of foreign policy, which pretty much what Truman had started. And so basically, as if the Democrats in Congress would go along with the president on international issues to help him, in fact, defeat some of his own party on those issues, then he would not dismantle the New Deal and the Fair Deal. And so Eisenhower doesn't try to contract what Roosevelt and Truman had did. He, in fact, expands. Social Security increases during Eisenhower's administration. The National Roads Program starts. A lot of things that we now think of as liberal programs actually expanded during Eisenhower's presidency, which is the reason he did so well with the leadership in Congress.
I mean, what a monumental moment that is in our history, because in theory, you finally get a Republican president after all those years of Democratic control under FDR, under Truman. Eisenhower, in theory, could have come in and begun to dismantle that welfare state that FDR had just put together, right?
Exactly. But, you know, Eisenhower was not a political person. In 1948, there were some Democrats who wanted him to run for president.
Including Harry Truman,
I think. Yes, they didn't think Truman could win re-election, so they thought Eisenhower would be an ideal candidate. So nobody quite knew where Eisenhower stood on a lot of these issues. You also had a very conservative leadership in the Republican Party in Congress. William Noland was the floor leader, and Eisenhower just could not work with Noland. They thought completely opposite. So here you have a situation in which the Republican president finds a much more compatible relationship with the Democratic leadership.
Hmm. What was Gerald Ford's trouble with Congress? Why didn't he fare any better?
You know, Lyndon Johnson was the supermajority leader. Gerald Ford was the superminority
leader.
He'd spent all those years as the minority leader of the House. His great aspiration was to be Speaker of the House. That's as high as he was aiming. And he was as surprised as anybody that he was suddenly thrust into the vice presidency, then into the presidency. And when he got in, I think Ford was resigned to losing battles in Congress. His advisors also told him that he needed to look tough as president, so he needed to veto a lot that came out of Congress. And so Ford's veto record is very high. It's as high as Harry Truman's, actually. And he's also overridden regularly by Congress on a lot of issues. He was trying to create a public image, but ironically, he would have done better, I think, in retrospect, if he had tried to work more with Congress and to try to build on those relationships rather than to be seen at loggerheads with them.
We're visiting with Donald Ritchie. He's the historian of the U.S. Senate about his new book, Congress and Harry S. Truman, A Conflicted Legacy. And Donald will be speaking tonight at 6:30 at the Kansas City, Missouri Public Library, the branch on the Country Club Plaza. More information's on our website, kcur.org, or you can RSVP at kclibrary.org. The event is absolutely free. I guess all this brings us down to our current president, another legislator-turned-president. His name is Barack Obama. How has he done so far?
Well, of course, he's had two very different Congresses. The first Congress that he came into office with was overwhelmingly Democratic, and he got quite a bit done. It was a very productive Congress, and they managed to pass the health care law that had eluded the Clinton administration. Harry Truman had proposed universal health care in 1945, so it had taken a long time to get to that stage. But the political parties had changed very dramatically over time. And in Harry Truman's day, he would have appealed to liberal Republicans as well as to liberal Democrats. And he would have faced conservative Democrats as well as conservative Republicans. By the time President Obama came in, I think he campaigned as promising to get beyond partisanship, to try to operate in a bipartisan way. But the minority party at that point didn't see any particular gain to cooperate. They were afraid they'd be steamrollered by the majority because it was such a large majority. And so you have a situation where the president goes to the House Republican Conference to ask for their support on the stimulus bill in 2009, and not one single member of the House Republican Conference votes for him. And it's at that point that they realize that it's not going to be a bipartisan situation. They're going to have to negotiate within the majority conference to get the support. In the House, that's easier said than, you know, it's easy to do because it's a majority rule operation. But in the Senate, it's a very difficult situation. And so essentially, negotiations had to be done inside the Democratic conference because there were no Republican votes that were coming over. Hmm. And that gave a lot of influence to the conservative and the more moderate or the swing vote Democrats, someone like Ben Nelson or Joe Lieberman and people like that were very influential in that first Congress. And they managed to do a lot, but of course it wasn't everything that the president wanted. It wasn't everything that the House Democrats wanted. Now you're facing a situation in which you've got two very different houses, a Democratic majority in the Senate, a Republican majority in the House. Congress is complicated enough, but this really makes it very difficult to get anything passed.
You know, Don, I get the impression that to a large degree that President Obama has more or less just sort of given up when it comes to relations with Congress. I'm overspeaking there a little bit, but he has sort of said, I'm going to try and go my own way now because I can't get any help from Congress right now.
Well, no president can give up on Congress because no president can do anything without congressional support. So, for instance, just this last week, they did pass the extension of the payroll tax credit.
And a minor miracle.
But they do accomplish things. It may not be pretty the way it's done, as they always say about, you know, don't watch sausage being made and don't watch legislation being made. Neither one of them are palatable, but they do accomplish things. And so the president continues to meet with the leadership in both houses on a regular basis, and there is a lot of give and take between the two sides that goes on. It doesn't necessarily always, you know, create great legislative packages, but they have to keep in communication.
So they are communicating right now, to the best of your knowledge.
They have from the very beginning. They always have. They don't agree, but they certainly do communicate.
Has there ever been another time in our history, Don, when a president has faced a Congress as decidedly as partisan as this Congress is?
Well, it's a different kind of partisanship. You know, presidents have faced very hostile Congresses. You can get a John Tyler against who's a Democrat against the Whigs in the 1840s, or a Andrew Johnson in the 1860s. It leads to Johnson's impeachment. There's such a difference between them. So we've had lots of periods in history where that's happened. In recent years, the parties have changed, and that's been the really significant difference between Harry Truman's era and Barack Obama's era, that in the 1940s, both political parties were internally divided. And that meant there was never a party line vote on anything because the moderate to liberals in both parties voted with each other against the conservatives in both parties. And that continued on through the 1980s. What's happened since the 1980s is the two parties have become much more homogenous. And it's more like a parliamentary system where one party thinks one way and the other party thinks the other way. There's much less division inside the party and much less agreement between the parties. And so party line votes are commonplace in Congress today. They would have flabbergasted Harry Truman if you saw that when he was president.
Does that make the job for the president harder or easier, Don?
Well, you know, political scientists used to think it would make it easier. They used to say, well, you know, the trouble is that the parties are too divided. We need to get them all together. You know, the president's party's got to stand with the president. Well, that's what they got now. And in fact, Congress isn't set up that way. Congress usually requires more than a majority. It usually requires a supermajority, especially in the Senate. And that requires some cooperation and conciliation. It's designed to build national consensus, to bring all these disparate parts of the country together. That's the role of Congress. And it's harder to do now when the two parties have drawn the line in the sand and they're sort of facing off against each other.
Donald Ritchie's our guest. He's the historian of the U.S. Senate. If you want to join our conversation, you can do so right now. Our phone number, 816-235-2888. Our email address, update@kcur.org, or go to KCUR's Facebook page. You can get a hold of us that way as well. So what have you learned as a result of doing your latest book, Don? What are the keys for any president to ensure, if not great relations with Congress, at least relations that help the country move forward?
Well, I think any president has to assume that relations are going to be difficult. There has never been a period in which everything has been peaceful and happy. In fact, the only time that Congress really comes together with a president is a time of crisis. Mm-hmm. You can be at the depth of the Depression, like 1933. Congress was desperate to get the country out of the Depression. They were willing to follow President Roosevelt wherever he led. You saw the same thing on September 11th in 2001. The Congress came together. Within a week, they had passed the Patriot Act. I think there are a lot of people who voted for that who wish they'd spent more time thinking about it. But that was the public expected them to pull together at that point. And so in times of crisis, there is wonderful unity. But day to day, Congress isn't designed to have that sort of efficiency and expeditiousness. There's a lot of disagreement. There's a lot of negotiation. There's a lot of compromise that has to go in. So presidents have to expect that they're going to have to constantly negotiate with their parties and the opposition party. And they've got to be willing to talk to them and have a two-way conversation.
So the fact there is not this great, cordial, friendly relationship on a day-to-day basis, listeners, citizens shouldn't be surprised by that, then, you're saying.
No.
It doesn't work that way.
Yes. Yeah, actually, you can go back to George Washington was having just as much trouble with Congress as modern presidents have. And he was throwing up his hands in despair at various times. You know, they were turning down some of his nominations. But our system is different from a parliament where the prime minister serves in the parliament and he is the leader of the party in that body. Our president is totally separate from Congress. And, you know, Sam Rayburn was once asked if he served. He said, we understand you served under eight presidents. And he said, no, I've served with eight presidents.
That's interesting.
And leaders of Congress don't see that they are under the control of the president. They are an equal branch with the president.
Do you think it works the way it's set up right now? I mean, would you change it if you could wave a magic wand down and change the way we operate?
Well, you know, our system has lasted for 220 years.
That's right.
It must be doing something right.
Right.
I once did an oral history with the old parliamentarian of the Senate, Floyd Riddick, who'd been there since the 1930s. And I asked him about the rules, you know, what would he do to change the rules? And he said, you know, the rules of the Senate are perfect. And if they change every one of them, the rules of the Senate will be perfect. And he meant that, you know, the system works the way it does because people want it to work this way. And if they decide they don't want it to work this way and change it, well, we'll do something with that and when it come to it.
But again, going back to this idea of what presidents have to do to get along with members of Congress, you know, you read these stories occasionally. Our local members of Congress here will come home and show you pictures of their meeting with the president in the White House. They went in with a small group and met with the president. Are there commonalities? Are there certain techniques that seem to have been proven successful over the years?
Yeah, I think presidents have got to go out of their way to meet with members of Congress, key members of Congress, on a regular basis. There are still a lot of people in Washington who think that Jimmy Carter's presidency got into trouble when he sold the Sequoia, which was the ship that went up and down the Potomac, and that was the place where the presidents would get the key leaders, and they would spend the night sailing down the river to Mount Vernon and come back, and they'd have a few drinks, and they'd talk.
They'd go to Mount Vernon, and they would watch the sun go down and listen to taps being played as they lowered the flag at the first president's home, right?
Exactly, exactly. Get them in the mood, look at the Washington Monument on the way back and things like that. Carter thought this was a drain on the taxpayers' expense and sold the boat. And he lost the opportunity to socialize, to have, you know, to have that little period of time when you're not talking politics. When Reagan was president,
he and
Tip O'Neill had this arrangement that after 6 o'clock, they could sit together, politics were over, and they could have a drink together.
Mm-hmm.
And Reagan would sometimes call up in the middle of the afternoon and say, Tip, is it 6 o'clock yet?
Yeah. Because that's how they got along so well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, what a great story. And Carter just had an expectation that, hey, I do my job, you do your job, and we're going to keep things real simple that way, but it's not that simple.
Yes, and he was pretty sure he was right about everything, and that's a difficult relationship to have. I think there's a lot of members of Congress who think there were a lot of missed opportunities during his presidency, unfortunately. Whereas Reagan was very genial, and Reagan went out of his way. His congressional liaison said it was so unusual working for a president who actually liked working with Congress.
Yeah. So the key here then is, at least one key is, what people don't get, you need to have relationships, social relationships perhaps, that go beyond politics.
Yes, and Harry Truman, of course, had been a member of the Senate. The very first day he was president of the United States, the first thing he did was to arrange to come up and have lunch with his old friends in the Senate. He knew he was going to need them. And even at the periods when he was having trouble with Congress, he was still getting his foreign policy programs through. So he maintained his good relations with Congress even when he had bad relations with Congress.
But he went through a real tumultuous period, though, Harry S. Truman we're talking about now. He becomes president in 45. The next year, for the first time in forever, the Congress goes Republican, right, for a couple of years. And it's not till the upset election of 48 where things return to Democratic rule. How big of a political feat was it for Truman, Don, for him to go from a Congress that had turned Republican for a couple of years after all those years of Democratic rule and then flip it 2 years later back to Democratic control?
It was a very unusual period. Truman actually got a lot out of the 80th Congress, but he got it out in foreign policy. All of the big
the
plans,
80th being the Republican
Congress mm-hmm. that came in, that had enough Congress, that after the New Deal and the war, the Republicans finally came back into power. But Truman's big issues in those days were the Cold War legislation that he was trying to get through, the Truman Doctrine, the Marshall Plan. And that Congress supported him, and he had terrific achievements, especially because people like Arthur Vandenberg, the senator from Michigan, came to his support on that. On domestic policy, of course, they thought entirely differently, and Truman vetoed a lot of their domestic politics. But in foreign policy, which was what really mattered most to Truman at that point, he had their support.
Because the war had just ended and foreign policy still is the whole thing.
And suddenly we were in a different situation with the Soviet Union. We had to get a war-weary public ready to fight a whole different type of war, a Cold War that was coming up. And then in 48, you know, not only did Truman win, but the Democrats won majorities in both the House and the Senate. And in many cases, those Democratic candidates ran ahead of Truman. The people like Paul Douglas in Illinois, Lyndon Johnson in Texas, Robert Kerr in Oklahoma, Russell Long in Louisiana. He had a very strong group of people who came into office at that point. But ironically, Truman's record with Congress didn't improve.
I was going to ask about that. Why not?
Well, because when they came back, it's true that he'd elected a lot of young, so liberal, ready, eager members. But the people who chaired the committees were the senior senators, and they were mostly from southern states, and they were a lot more conservative than Truman was on domestic issues. And so Truman found a lot of his domestic politics bottled up in their committees. And Republicans and conservative Democrats had a voting alliance that defeated Truman on a lot of these issues. So he was actually not any more successful with his domestic legislation during the two more Congresses that the Democrats controlled than he had been during the one that the Republicans controlled.
And it's during these years that Truman tries to pass national health care reform, right, and falls short.
Sure, he tries a lot. He talks for civil rights legislation. He proposes a lot of things that actually don't get passed until Lyndon Johnson is president.
Mm-hmm.
And so Truman was – he had a very liberal agenda, and he was very overt about what he wanted to do, but he was not very successful in getting it done.
You know, just hearing you talk about this, it does bring up the sort of the question in my mind about how difficult it is to really accurately and fairly assess how effective any president is with Congress, because there are so many variables here. It's who controls, who's in power in Congress at the time, what kind of relationships that they have with the president, what the international situation is like. There's just a lot of things on the table here,
yes,
right?
And of course, every member of Congress wants a lot because they want it for their districts. My favorite story deals with Lyndon Johnson, who was once called in the middle of the night by Russell Long of Louisiana. Long was in distress because he'd heard that Fort Polk in Louisiana was going to be closed. It was going to affect the economy of his state. He said, "Mr. President, you've got to do something. This will just ruin me politically." So Johnson said, "Well, let me find out about that." And Johnson calls the Pentagon. He talks to Cyrus Vance, and he says, "What's the status with Fort Polk?" And as he's talking, Vance says, "Well, Fort Polk's not on the list of bases to be closed." And Johnson's going on. He said, "What did you say?" And he said, "Well, it's not on the list." So Johnson says, "Don't tell anybody about this." And he gets back on the phone. He calls Russell Long and he says, "Russell, don't worry about it." And Russell Long says, "Oh, thank you, Mr. President. Anything you need, I'll be glad to do for you." Johnson hasn't done anything for him at all, essentially. But Johnson knew how to make each member of Congress feel like he was their ally and that they needed him as much as he needed them. And he got people to do things in return for him over the years. And he carried their votes in his pocket, and he reminded them of what he had done for them over the years that they wanted their support in return.
So now Russell Long owed LBJ a favor,
exactly.
Right? That's how it works.
Exactly.
Yeah, and that's the way it works. And Russell Long has to come through at some point and repay the favor.
And it's getting harder and harder for presidents to have things like that to give to members of Congress. And so it's harder to win people over in some respects. But Johnson was a master at it. Johnson understood that from his years as majority leader. He essentially knew what every member was aiming for, and he tried somehow to satisfy that.
Before you go, Don, give me a sense of our two presidents prior to Barack Obama, Bill Clinton and then George W. Bush. How would you assess their relations with Congress? Because Bill Clinton came in with high hopes as well, and those crashed pretty quickly.
Yes. Clinton failed to get a health care bill through in his first Congress, and he lost the majorities in both houses. Ironically, Clinton looked better after his party lost because he then spent the next 6 years playing the House and Senate and the Democrats and Republicans off of each other. And
triangulation, they
called
it.
Yes, and he was very successful at doing that, not on big issues, but on lots of smaller issues as it went along. And when the Congress shut down the federal government, they took the blame, and Clinton looked very presidential in the process. So Clinton dealing with the opposition party actually was stronger than Clinton dealing with his own party. President George W. Bush, doesn't rate very high on any of these polls. But in fact of the matter is he actually was pretty successful in his first couple of years as president. Even though the Senate was 50-50, and for a while, remember after Senator Jeffords crossed the line, the Democrats were actually in the majority. But President Clinton got his tax President Bush got his tax cuts through. He got his war resolutions through. He got prescription drugs through. And in return, of course, he allowed Congress to pass what they were interested in. And this was the heyday of earmarks. And for the first 6 years that he was president, George W. Bush did not veto a single bill.
Wow.
So he allowed essentially the federal deficits to balloon and to spending to increase, which ran against his philosophy but kept his relations with Congress very strong. With his party was in the majority during that period. So actually Bush and Clinton on the average did pretty well with their relations with Congress, although it didn't always turn into good publicity for them. Their track records were not that bad.
Well, Don, I sure enjoyed having you. Thanks for taking some time.
Oh, it's been my pleasure.
That's Donald Ritchie. His new book is Congress and Harry S. Truman, A Conflicted Legacy. And again, you can hear him tonight at 6:30 at the Kansas City, Missouri Public Library, the branch on the plaza. More information's on our website, kcur.org, or you can RSVP by going to kclibrary.org. The event is absolutely free. Don, I sure enjoyed it. All the best.